Blog Talk Radio.
Hello?
Hello, Tony.
Hey, I'm right here. I'm about to walk outside so I can hear you guys better. But I got to go say goodbye to my cohorts, my colleagues.
Alrighty.
So, if you guys are on the air, this is the Tornado, the one and only. I'm in a suit and tie tonight. I look kind of spiffy. I'm going to give a shout out. So if you guys hear loud music in the background, that's only me. And then I'll be able to hear you when I go outside. Oh, I might do Mama number five first.
Hello. Can you hear me now, Tom?
All right, I'm in for you.
We're having fun at the work party. All right. I'm walking outside now.
All right. I can't hear anything.
Well, I hope you can hear me.
That's Tom. There he is.
Oh, all right.
Psychic Tom is in the building. On the line. All right. So we got no guests. I lied last week when I said I was going to be a guest. I've just been really busy. It's firewood season, along with Christmas season. So.
Okay. I'm now out of the room. I say goodbye to everybody.
All right.
I don't know where the hell I park. And honestly, I really don't know where the hell I'm at.
Uh-oh. Have you been drinking?
Yeah. No, well, I had two beers. That doesn't count. My escapade from Thanksgiving are much better than that. When they had me singing Welcome to the Jungle dressed up as Santa Claus. I don't know how to get out of this place. I think this is the way out.
Are you trying to do
something? I had to behave myself. I was with worse people. And when I get to my car, that'll put me on speakerphone, so that'll be a lot better so I can hear. So, but how's everybody doing?
I'm doing all right, considering.
Considering what?
I almost killed myself the other day.
How the hell did you do that?
Let's just say I have a new appreciation for traumatic brain injury.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Do tell.
So the other day, last week, I was doing some logging in the woods. And I had a tree that fell over about 45 degrees.
Got caught up in another tree.
So I come in and I cut the top part, and then I cut a little of the bottom part, hoping the tree will fall down. Fine. So I get to a point where the tree's not falling. So I go and decide, me and my buddy are going to grab this big log, one on each end, and we're going to throw it at the tree. So it'll break.
Yeah.
And then it'll fall. So I picked my end up over my head, and the other kid didn't even seem to get it up to his shoulder. And I ended up throwing my end, and the thing bounced off the tree and hit me right in the
head. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Like, probably about a 4-foot section of log. Cherry log.
Oh! Oh!
Right in the front of the head. And I saw stars, I saw fuzziness for about an hour, had a big lump on my head, I almost went black right out. I went gray for about 30 seconds.
Bird shit.
Oh.
Rich, when that happens on the Three Stooges, they recover a lot quicker, okay? This took you an hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, I've been hit in boxing a lot, and I've seen little stars, stuff like that, but I've never been hit this hard, and I can only imagine it must be what it's like to take a head kick from somebody who's really good at throwing head kicks.
Right.
Oh, it was tough, because not only did I have the pain that initially you feel, but you worry, like, oh, geez, how bad is this going to be, because...
I started seeing fuzziness all around my vision,
It was very weird. Kind of like, you know how when you're looking through fumes and it gets all fuzzy?
Mm-hmm.
Like gas fumes in the hot air or something? That's what it was like all around my vision for at least an hour. And then it settled down, and I did feel slightly dumber the next couple of days.
Well, I'll tell you, when I had my first boxing match for Lockhaven, I got my ass kicked in a sparring session by an all-American guy that they wanted to teach me a little bit of a lesson. And believe me, he did. He whipped my ass up and down. But when I had my first fight, like, I was really out of shape. And I was kicking the guy's ass the first round. He was about 6'3", 6'4". He had a 100 reach on me from Shippensburg. In fact, it was just the 19-year anniversary of it last week. But then I had him hurt, and then I ran out of gas. And I'm gasping. And now I'm walking straight in with my hands down, and this guy's hitting me with right hand after right hand after right hand. And I remember he hit me with a shot in the second round that the one coach that was doing scouting on the fight said, it actually picked my front foot up about a foot. And when that happened, I remember it stunned me. It was the first time I was ever really stunned. And I remember sitting there going, like, I was feeling like I was in a dream, and everything was real cloudy around me. Like, I remember seeing, like, almost like big clouds if you were in tunnel vision. And I was like, it felt like it took about 2 hours, but maybe it took only about 2 seconds. And I was like, man, I wonder where I am, you know? And I felt like I was literally sleeping in a dream. And then I remember looking up and seeing this guy, and it seemed like he was about 10 feet away from me when he was really only about maybe a foot or two. And I said, oh, my God, I'm fighting tonight. And then he finally stopped me. But that was the fight that really convinced me, okay, now it's time to get my ass in shape. And then I know another time I was actually talking to Coach Ken Cooper tonight from Lock Haven. And we didn't get a chance to talk about this one, but I still laugh about it. When I was fighting in Mansfield University, first time, I'm fighting this real tough kid named Frank Stoltz. And I had Frank down. I had him hurt. And then he was coming back. We were going back and forth. And then finally, he caught me with a right hand in the third round. And boom! And I remember buckling and holding on to him, and they were giving me an 8 count. And I remember looking at Coach Cooper. And I'm like, okay, I can bullshit him because I bullshitted my parents enough times when I was drunk trying to send them sober. And I'm like, okay, I'm okay, Coop, I'm okay, Coop. And he goes, okay, where are you? And I'm like, oh, shit, I have no idea where the hell I'm at. And like I said, it felt like it was about an hour. And like I said, in reality, it was probably only a matter of seconds. And I remember actually shouting at him. When I remember the answer, I was like, man, failed. And he's like, okay, you know. And then he's like, well, I'm waiting for the walk straight because I've perfected that, walking into my house 1,000 times. He's like, step to your right. I'm like, oh, fuck. I'm like, I don't want to trip over myself. And I actually had to hop so that way I could move to the right. But yeah, but speaking of traumatic injuries, I almost took a chainsaw to the face last week.
Whoa.
Yeah, we were doing the Christmas trees, and my one friend was, we were just me and him, and we had opened a bunch of them. We cut the strings off them, and he was sitting there, he was like, hey, we got to open some of these bad boys. I said, okay. And he was trimming the bottom branches, and then he would give me, he would go zoom, zoom with the chainsaw to let me know to flip it over. And he gave me the zoom, zoom, and I went to flip it over, and he moved the chainsaw up, and was about 40 inches from my face.
Wow.
All of them were very rude.
Do the average chainsaw injury takes about 145 stitches?
Yeah, that would kind of mess up my extremely good luck.
They're calling you Leatherby.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, we got a lot of boxing to talk about, a lot of MMA to talk about. You know, the traumatic brain injury is obviously a big issue lately with these heavyweight fights we're seeing in MMA. Man, you talk about a fight. This one was epic. That's UFC Fight Night 33, Mark Hunt versus Antonio Silva.
And you talk about two big guys going five rounds in a non-title fight. This is about the best you could expect. And Mark broke his hand very badly. I saw the x-rays. One story. And you think about what kind of a head Antonio Silva has. And he got messed up pretty bad. Both guys were just hands down slugging most of the fight. And,
well, I read that Hunt had his hand broken in two different places. And I can only imagine the pain that was. And I could have sworn, if you noticed how Bigfoot was kicking his calf, kind of an unusual attack, and it wouldn't have surprised me if a bone in his leg was broken. I mean, it was, to me, it was the kind of fight that I think those of us who are really hardcores, and, you know, I can speak for all three of us here, we've all fought, we're fanatics about this, we're very experienced, we're very knowledgeable about it. I think our audience is the same. We have a hardcore audience, and we can appreciate a fight like this even more. Now, my point here is the average person, and I don't really talk to a lot of average people about fighting, but when I do, their attitude is it's kind of like a Rock'em Sock'em movie. And a lot of their, believe it or not, I mean, guys, correct me if you think I'm wrong, but it seems like a lot of people have the reality of fighting from what they see on television in the movies. Now, we know better. And anyone who's really into this knows better. And where I'm going with this is a lot of times when someone is really hurt, it's easy to give up. It's hard to come back. That takes a special kind of fighter. Okay? That's why we talk about guys like Zale and Graziano. That's why we talk about the Wards and the Gaddis. I mean, it takes a special person. And either one of those guys could have easily given up. And that is where this fight was just, it wasn't the most technically proficient fight, but you give me the fourth round of Ron Lyle and George Foreman. That maybe wasn't the most technically proficient round, but that's a round that is a movie. And that's kind of what this fight was like in one sense. He's up, he's down, he's up, he's down, he's up, he's down, and yeah, he's got other guys coming back, and it's back and forth. And you just don't see that often. And I think that's where this was such an unusual treat that I think everyone enjoyed it. Even the casual fans could enjoy it. But those of us who really are into this, what more could you ask for? And there was a thread on the Underground wondering how many years of each guy's life this fight would take off of them. And someone says, well, if they're both going to live to 87, if they die at 84, it's worth it. So
this is my concern watching this fight is that maybe we really need to look at how many rounds we have these guys fight. If this is what they can do to each other in five rounds. I don't know as far as long term what this is going to do to both guys, but obviously when you break a hand, you know, he can't even have any contact for 6 months, I read somewhere.
That's an awful scenario for him.
Obviously he's keeping his job because he put on a show, and that's what Dana White wants. But, you know, what is putting on a show and you know, saving your own life? Stop. It blows my mind how much damage these guys can do.
Tony, did you see that fight, Tony?
I did not. In fact, I didn't really see any fights this past weekend because I was working so much. But by the time I got home on Saturday, I missed even the boxing matches because I fell asleep.
Okay, well, I'm going to send you a link, and I really, this is something very special, and I wouldn't do this normally, but okay. I mean, this is just one of those, to me, it just had the qualities of a movie. There were even guys posting that said for the last couple rounds, they were just standing in front of the television in a fight stand screaming. You know, it was that kind of fight, and my God, that's all I could say. And I guess there's not going to be any kind of immediate rematch because both guys want to try to go in different directions. And you know, since there wasn't a whole lot on the line, that maybe the next time, if they do have a rematch, there'll be some title implications there. So we'll see. But
I don't think those guys ever
want to
punch each other again.
Yeah, I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all.
It's kind of bad, but, you know, sometimes styles make fights, they say. But in this situation, you know, this is
this style made them not want to fight each other again. just because Mark Hunt, I mean, I don't know how he gets away with it, specifically Mark Hunt, because he literally just walks in there with his hands at his waist and throws shots and takes shots. And, you know, a guy like Silva, you'd think, you know, his name is Bigfoot. You'd think he'd try to throw a few kicks on a short guy like that. But, you know, he kicked his leg a few times and really didn't have much of the feet going. They both just got into a real big slugfest most of the fight. And, you know, crowds and fans love that kind of stuff. But, you know, if you want to put a career into the sport, you have to develop some kind of defense.
Well, that's, Rich, you were able to see that crowd, especially after that fourth, going into the last round, and even after the third round, I think people realized we're seeing something very special here. This is just every guy, each one of them laying it on the line, and you've seen the response of that crowd. Now, I could only imagine what it would have been like being in the arena for that. The walls had to be shaken.
Well, it was the first time we had a draw decision that I felt was totally justified.
Yes, yes. I mean, yeah, exactly.
I mean, who would want to pick the winner of a fight like that? It's better off being a draw.
I kept going back and forth myself, and then finally I said, you know, I'm not a judge at this. Let me just sit back and enjoy it. You know, the hell with trying to score it.
Sometimes if you don't want to watch a fight, and especially guys like us that aren't so much into the sport, and like sometimes like I'm going to watch a fight, and I'll purposely break out a paper and a pen, and I'll score the fight. And you don't, I mean, it could be a fight. I'm going to sit down and score this fight. It could have been a three-round knockout. And it's like, okay, who really cares? But at the same time, there are times I would shut down and say, you know what? I don't want to score this fight. I want to just enjoy the
right.
I feel like I'm covering the sport. Now, it's hard. Like, when I go to fights now, and Tom, we went to one together. Like I said, I had a couple friends on that card. And
right.
I had to balance between being a fan and being a journalist, being a professional.
Right.
But I thought I was able to pull it off just because I went there. I enjoyed them, but I was also able to work, which is a promise that I make, you know, to myself, the promoters, and ultimately our readers.
I knew that Mark Hunt was special when Dan Bobich, and I don't even know if that one's on YouTube. If it is, I could send you guys a link. But, I mean, I know from training with Dan Bobich, got a black eye once from holding up pads from his knee strikes. And this guy was tried didn't have any weight limits, and Bobich was 340 pounds, and he was just superb on the ground. And when he took, this is when Mark Hunt initially went into Pride, and Mark's ground skills were evolving, but at the time they were pretty much non-existent. And the whole strategy of the fight going in was get it to the ground, and that's what Bobich did, and pounded that coconut head until Bobich's hands gave out. And he couldn't hurt him. And then in the second round, Hunt kept it up and knocked him out. And so I knew Mark Hunt at that point was special. And I can't believe the guy's still fighting and still seemingly impervious to punishment. An amazing human being.
Well, this card was in Australia, in Queensland, and Mark Hunt doesn't exactly live in Australia proper, but he lives in New Zealand. And he's very fan-friendly around there. He's a big favorite. And I would have expected if there was a decision for one guy or the other in that fight, it would have gone to him, but went to nobody. So I think it's good for the sport. It elevated both guys to a new level. I think maybe Silva was a little bit on the chopping block for his latest inability to make anything of his title shots. And Mark Hunt has come off a couple big, huge performances, and this was probably the best, at least in memory. But he always puts on a show, so I think win or lose, they're always going to keep him around until he decides he doesn't want to be around anymore. Silva, maybe not so much. He's not really that popular, but, he did prove that he comes to fight,
and he won some wins. So, and he did beat up Overeem, so I'd like to see that. But anyway, he's both of them are going to be sticking around for a little while, and I'm looking forward to what happens next there. But Hunt is definitely going to be out for 6 months minimum with that hand, and it sucks for him because he just got off a real bad leg infection after his last fight, so it never gets any better, I guess, for him. He's going to be taking full advantage of the UFC health plan.
And once you break a hand like that, especially a hand, I mean, that is an injury that is recurring. I remember it's like Arturo Gatti, it's like he would break his right hand every fight. You know, sometimes worse. I mean, I didn't even know when second Mickey Ward fight that he broke it. But the third Mickey Ward fight, you obviously knew he broke it because he was crouched over in pain.
Yeah.
I mean, Vinny Taziandi used to tell me how many times he broke his right hand in fights.
Vinny Paz.
Hey, but Vinny Paz's birthday coming up, I think, this week.
Uh-oh. We're going to get him back on the show for the R-rated version.
We got to send him some birthday wishes.
Anyway, let's get through this card here. The UFC Fight Night 33 from Queensland, Australia. We got the main event down. Kick that horse to death there, or beat it to death. We got the co-main event was Shogun, Mauricio Shogun Hua, who ironically was talking with Dana White about possibly retiring if he lost this fight. He beat James Tehuna by knockout punch in the very first round, 1 minute in, and he showed that he's sticking around. He's probably going to be in title contention if he keeps winning like that.
Yeah, I think that Freddie Roach's boxing instructions really starting to take effect because, you know, Shogun had always been a little bit wild with his punches, a little bit wide, and you notice that left hook was just right out of a boxing 101 manual. So, see where he goes.
Yeah, that was great for him. And our boy Soa Palele, who couldn't get an interview time to help us out because he's in Australia, big time difference. So he was a almost guest for last night. Maybe down the line we'll get him on. But he beat up Pat Barry pretty good, also a first-round knockout. And that was at the 209 mark. Pat Barry, I've never been impressed very much. I lost all respect for him when he started hugging Krokop in their fight there. So I don't know what's going on with him, but
he's got the stand-up skills. But it's, and I know he's working hard on his ground game, and I've seen him a few times actually win a few fights by submission and reverse a few things on the ground. But it just seems like when the moment comes, it's just, you know, the old cliche, just that missing ingredient. And I don't know what it is. I mean, he's a smart guy, but there's just something, there's a piece of the puzzle missing, and I honestly don't know. I mean, he seems like such a good guy. I'd like to see him find it, but I don't know. At this stage of his career, it's going to be tough for him.
And then we had Ryan Bader beat Anthony Broche to a bloody pulp, basically. You saw blood on the ring. That cage man there through most of the fight. After that fight, anyway, it was all over the map. It ended up being a unanimous decision for Bader. He couldn't take Broche out of there. But one thing, Baroche has heart, for sure. But it also shows that Bader's still a powerful fighter there in that division. See what happens with him, but I think Baroche just had a bad night.
I was very unimpressed when he started bum-rushing him there in the third round. I mean, maybe it was just out of desperation. So the question is was this a reflection of Bader really getting his mojo back, or was it Perosh was just outmatched? Just we'll see in his next fight, Bader's next fight.
But then we had the seventh fight of the night was Clint Hester beating Dylan Andrews by TKO dark stoppage. That was in the second round. After the second round, looked like Dylan was holding his shoulder area, And then we went to the doctor. The doctor came in. Turned out I think he had a separated shoulder, so he couldn't fight anymore. And in those cases, I don't think they tally up the cards or even tell you what the card says. Like boxing. So we don't know who was winning or losing that fight. But usually when a guy gets injured like that, it's him who was losing. But separated shoulder could happen. It wasn't necessarily lost the fight. But TKO, my master gets a TKO win, moves on, up the rankings a little bit. And then we had a female fight that had very big repercussions. Beth Correa beat Julie Kendi and beat her literally into retirement. She's quitting the fight team. Done with it. She actually ended up losing by split decision. So at least one judge thought she won. But couldn't get the nod there and decided to hang up the gloves. Well done. Then we had the Asian hour. Kea Mizugaki versus Nam Phan. And Phan just really couldn't figure out Mizugaki's slugging. So he had a lot of elbow type of strikes going on in Mizugaki. A lot of good grappling. Nam just really couldn't keep up. Wasn't as technical. He's more of a, straight puncher and by the basics type of guy. And Mizugaki threw a little here and there at him that he'd never seen before, I think. So just didn't look good there at all. And he ended up losing by unanimous decision there. Then we had, I don't know if he's related, but it sounds like, he probably has to be. Kyle Michael Hayes, probably related to Vinny. Beat Nick Ring by unanimous decision. And Justin Scoggins beat Richie Vashulik by TKO. Christoph Jutko beat Bruno Santos by unanimous decision. And last one. Alex Garcia beat Ben Wall by knockout 43 seconds into the fight, first fight of the night. Pretty nice. So we had a lot of boxing over the weekend, too.
We had a dueling card from HBO and Showtime, which is always fun. I only got to see a little bit of them just because by the time I got home, and then I went out after work and I went out to dinner, and literally before I went out to dinner, I was falling asleep on the way home. Got some food in my stomach, and I was, like, trying to watch them. And unfortunately, the Austin Trout Arisandri Lara fight was so dreadful, I couldn't stay up anymore.
Well, one fight that kind of flew under the radar, but really turned out to be a pretty decent fight. James Kirkland fought Blake Tapia.
I didn't get to see it. I heard Tapia put on a good show early, but Kirkland was just too much. And I heard a lot of criticism for Tapia's corner for not stopping that fight before he really got himself beat up.
Yeah, actually, this article says the fight could have been stopped at least a round earlier, perhaps two. But Kirkland quickly stepped on the gas and never let up.
I don't even know from working in a corner, and it's like you got to know your fighters, too. It's like you're always in like a rock and a hard place. Because like you'll get the Apollo Creed-type fighters in the corner, and I know that was a movie. But at the same time, they're like, you're not going to stop this fight no matter what. And they'll want to keep going. And then if the corner does stop it, then they're mad because they feel they still have a chance. And there are other times the trainer has to just be the authoritative figure saying, nope, this is over. I don't care. And then you can hate me, and then you'll eventually forgive me. I'd rather you forgive me than I have to forgive myself for letting something happen to you.
Eddie Futch and Joe Frazier. When Eddie Futch stopped the Thriller in Manila, okay? There you go.
Yep. Thank you. And you know what? I always say that. In fact, I was arguing with a friend of mine recently who loved Floyd Mayweather, which is fine, but he was talking about how he had put a picture on Facebook of Uncle Roger. Like, if you don't think Uncle Roger's the best trainer in boxing, you don't know shit about boxing. Or as Uncle Roger say, you don't know shit about boxing. And I'm like, he's not the best trainer in boxing. He's not the best trainer of all time. He's not the best parent trainer. He's not the best trainer in my old gym in South Philadelphia. I said, anybody could train Floyd Mayweather. Anybody. You know, because the guy's one, a phenomenal boxer. The guy's a freakish athlete. And the guy's tremendously dedicated. And he grew up in the sport. But I would love to see what would happen. And this goes for Floyd Sr. too. What would happen in a fight with two things would happen. One, the fighter would need to change his game plan because he's getting beaten and falling behind the cards. Because I would love to see what kind of advice they would give. Not just, you're not this motherfucking bum out. He's a bum. He can't do nothing. What do you let him hold around for? He's a bum. That's not instruction. That's, in fact, a cheerleader. In fact, when we used to box in the yard when I was 12 years old, my friends would say that. I don't see them proclaiming themselves the best trainer in boxing. I would love to see them, one, be able to change the game plan, and two, if Floyd was getting beat up real bad in the fight, and he's cut and he's bleeding, would they have the compassion to stop the fight? Would they have the compassion to say, sit down, son, no one will ever forget what you've done here today? And you know what, and one more point, a lot of times trainers does, in part, have to be a cheerleader. I'm not saying do the Teddy Atlas thing and sit on the stool and make bring the attention to yourself, but I'll give you a perfect example of a fighter that was giving instructions and his fighter was still losing that turned and became a cheerleader and turned the fight around. And can you guys tell me who it is? I'm going to tell you right now, Tom Kahn, and which you probably can too. You're blowing it, son. You're blowing it.
Well, see, I think that comes down to knowing your fighter. You got to know your fighter, and you know, Tony, what you got me thinking of was going back to when Larry Holmes was defending against Jerry Cooney, and I remember they went over to Cooney's corner after the the fourth or fifth round. And at that point, you know, this is not going to be a quick blowout for Cooney because some people thought, you know, considering the power that Cooney brought to that fight, that he had every possibility of ending it quick, but Holmes knocked him down in the second round. That was unexpected. Holmes has got his rhythm going. And here's Victor Valley screaming at Jerry, just obscenity, like, Jerry, this guy is shit. This guy is shit. Come on. You know, and it's like, yeah, come on. Let him know what he's doing wrong out there. Let him know. Try to cut, you know what I'm saying. Work the body more or something. Get that jab going. Cut the ring off. Rough him up more. No specifics at all, just about how bad Holmes was. And I thought that was terrible coaching.
Horrible. Absolutely. You're 100% right on that. Now, I'll give you a couple examples that I remember.
It's pretty big.
I'll give you two examples from my fight days. One was a technical change, and one was a cheerleading change. I remember the one time going into the one fight, and first round, I was getting my tail kicked. I was getting my ass kicked so bad, I didn't want to go back to the corner. Because I knew what the coach had in line for me. And he got all my shit. And he's like, you know what? You're embarrassing yourself out there. You're embarrassing yourself. You know, you better step up, because I'll pull you out of this ring right now and stop this fight. And if you don't want to be an embarrassment, you better go out there and straighten it up. And you know what? I came back in the second and third rounds, and I won that fight. I had the guy out of the seat at the final bell. Now, another one was I was fighting a guy down in Richmond, Virginia. And it was one of those times when he was trying to intimidate me, and I kind of laughed at him. But he brought the fight to me in the first round, and he was swinging wild. And then when I landed a shot, I actually dropped him to his knees. He got up and he kept swinging, and the fight was turning on my momentum, but he was actually still blocking some of my shots, but I was definitely getting the better of him. And I remember going to the corner in the third round, and I'm looking at him, and I feel great, and I actually became a cheerleader. This Kirk Cooper was like, Tone, you got this fight, but what you got to do to close the show is he is looking for your hook. He's looking for it. So hook off the jab. Don't wait till you throw the right hand. Surprise him with the hook. Hook off the jab. Hook off the jab. The third time you hook off the jab, feint the jab, feint the hook, step over to your left and fire a right hand right down the middle. And I remember looking at him saying, let the game knock this motherfucker out. You know, I became the cheerleader. And then he got on fire and goes, go get him, he's yours. And then when I went in and I did it, just like you said, jab, hook, landed. Jab, hook, landed. Fake, fake, boom. And that pretty much ended the fight. And the bell rang. I was like, that round was only the 30 seconds. But the bell rang and it went to distance. But that was one time I needed the cheerleading, one time I needed the instruction.
Know your fighter. Know your fighter.
Yeah, Coach Cooper always would say this when he would talk to us in, like, pre-fight meetings. He'd be taping our hands. He goes, listen to me. He'd be like, first of all, if you score a knockdown and you're in the neutral corner, don't look at the opponent. Look at us, and we're going to try to give you hand signals. That's one. He goes, second of all, when we get to the corner, listen to us. You might not agree with what we have to say, but we're saying it because we've seen something. Like Max Schmeling, I see something.
Right.
Good. That's what
on Kirkland's situation over Tapia, he landed 305 of 644 punches in just over five rounds. Tapia only landed 132 of 437 punches. So over, more than doubled his output.
Yeah, MatchBoxing.com has an article on that talking about haven't we learned anything considering some of the recent tragedies that we've seen. And, you know, I don't know. I know Steve Schmoger was the referee, and I have a lot of confidence in him. I haven't seen the fight. I don't know. I'm going to try to find it. So I don't know if it was the ref, if it was the corner. What do you guys think? Or have you seen it? Either one of you seen it?
I never saw it.
I did not get to see it. I had fallen asleep by that time.
But the good news is Tapia was taken to the Atlantic City Medical Center following the fight, and all head scans were negative for concussion damage.
Apparently, with just one last thing on that one, apparently Ann Wolf was doing some very colorful cheerleading in the corner, okay? Stuff I don't even care to repeat, but you can find it on MaxBoxing.com. Great story on that.
Yeah, those two seem to be a good fit, Ann Wolf and Kirkland, and it does mention her in this article that she's one of the only female trainers in boxing right now. And she had a pretty good career on her own, so makes sense. Right.
I mean, Layla had no problem beating up Christy Martin, who was like 40 years old and about moving up about 25, 30 pounds and being really out of shape. She had no problem beating her up. And it was just something to play with Ann Wolf and was like, I'm sorry, I don't know who that is.
Well, she did pretty good here with Kirkland, and starts working with that. Better, whatever happens. We've got another fight, Cuban Guillermo Pinto remained undefeated. Crap out of Joseph Tecpico of Gaga. He's now 29-5 with 22 KOs. Rigondeaux improves to 13-0, and Rigondeaux pretty much won every single round.
Rigondeaux was a fighter that's really underrated. They just, you know, he came up from Cuba. He's only got, you know, as of right now, 13 fights under his belt. But he has taken top-notch fighters and just shut them down. And that goes back to that tremendous Cuban background that he has. I forget what he had. It was like 300 or 400 amateur fights. This is a guy that's got a lot of experience. You know, he's a guy that's going in there with the best in the world, like he did to Menino Tenere, who was the number 3 ranked pound-for-pound fighter, and just shut him down like Bonet had never stepped in the ring before.
Right. Also on that same card, Matthew Macklin for 30 wins, 5 losses with KOs. And he beat prospect Lamar Russ to do that. Russ was 14-1 with 7 knockouts. That was his first 10-round fight. Then, of course, we had the big Brooklyn brawl there, Paulie Malignaggi versus Zeb Judah. And Malignaggi looked pretty decent from what I've read. Obviously, he led with jab.
I didn't see it. I know Zab knocked him down with a straight left in the second round. But they said Paulie just really just outboxed him with a clinic. But the one criticism about the fight was, like, these guys looked like they were too much friends. It's like, it was like too much mutual respect, too much. It looks like a sparring session from the reports I've heard. Paulie won, and Paulie outboxed him, but at the same time, it wasn't like a lot of animosity in that.
Well, then we had a little bit less entertaining bout from the reports I'm seeing. Sean Porter remained undefeated to get a unanimous decision over Devin Alexander.
Didn't Sean win his first title with that fight?
Alexander. What?
Sean won his first title with that fight?
Still not getting you.
Title fight.
A title fight? Was it a title fight?
I thought it was.
Oh, yeah. Alexander lost his IBF welterweight title.
Yeah. And I remember, like, we interviewed Sean when he only had how many fights under his belt.
Right.
And I remember saying, I remember he was talking a lot about, I think, training with Sugar Shane Mosley at the time. But I remember telling my dad after that fight was over and saying, Dad, watch this kid. And I said, I don't know how good of a fighter he is, but just from talking to him, I automatically like him. And I said, he was just so freaking nice.
Yeah. Guy I've seen fight a couple times out at the Cosmopolitan out there in Vegas was also on this card, Arislandi Lara. He has a 19-1-2, or he has a 19-1-2 record now with 12 knockouts. He became the second Cuban fighter to win on Saturday, giving Austin Trout his second career defeat. Trout falls.
That was not a good fight. It was not entertaining at all, and that was part of my reason for falling asleep so damn early.
Lara says here, it does just enough to win, dropping Trout in the 11th round.
Yep. Listen, guys, hold the fort for me for a few minutes. I got to run and play Wawa real quick.
All right.
Be right back.
We had Saki Mika, 32-5 with 2 draws, 21 knockouts. Fought Anthony Durrell, 26-0-2 with 22 knockouts, and they fought to a draw. Judges scored it 114-112 for Rico, 116-110 for Durrell, and 113-113 for the draw. That's a great line. It was the correct decision in a fight that was nearly forgotten the minute it was over. As I mentioned earlier, there's another little story here about Julie Kenzie. She decided to retire after last Saturday, and I just wanted to read what her comments were. She said, before walking out to my fight today, I had a long talk with my coach, and we decided that this would be my last MMA fight. I would have loved to have gone out on a win, but c'est la vie, don't leave it to the judges. Heartbreak is a huge part of this sport. She also said, I really truly want to thank all of you for being part of my journey as a fighter. I will still be involved in MMA for the rest of my life, but now it's time for me to accept that I can get more to the sport by stepping back and taking a role in helping to develop other fighters. From the bottom of my heart, thank you to the UFC, my team, and all of you have made me achieve some amazing dreams.
Yeah, so, she's been around quite a while.
Yep. And I guess we'll wait for Tony to get back and talk about this one. See if we can find another MMA tidbit here. Oh, here's one. Kind of both boxing and MMA, but Dana White says he is willing to book a boxing bout between Anderson Silva and Roy Jones Jr. if
if Silva beats Weidman. So maybe he knows something we don't. But apparently, he says, these two drive me crazy. They drive me crazy. First of all, Roy Jones Jr. is a longtime friend of mine. When I was a 19-year-old kid in the boxing business, Roy Jones was very good to me. So I'm in this position where I feel like Roy wants to fight him. He wants to fight Roy. I feel like I'm in this position to try to make both of these guys happy. But it drives me crazy. I would love Roy Jones Jr. to focus on his next opponent and Anderson to focus on his. We'll talk about all this stuff. I know Roy's coming to the fight. We'll see what happens. I'm not sure why it's necessary. Oh, this is the comment from the article. I'm not sure why it's necessary that Silva beat Weidman for a pointless boxing match to take place, but there you have it.
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting that Dana would say if Silva wins. I don't know how many more fights he has left on his contract, but I'd almost have to think if Silva loses, it'd be the end of him. You know, you know what I mean? Because he's pushing 40 now, and you'd have to think that, you know, who knows what goes through a fighter's head. It's awful hard to quit. How, you know, we know that game. But you'd have to, you know, because you hear some of these rumors that he is getting a little exhausted with things, and if he would decide to hang him up and retire from MMA, well, then he'd be a free agent, more or less. But I just don't know how many fights he has left, so, on the UFC contract.
Yeah, I don't know the deals for that to be conditional. But it's interesting to see the ways that Dana White would consider giving the okay to that, win or lose, because I think it would open up the floodgates to other guys saying, well, I want to compete in this sport, which seems to have to compete in the UFC, so if Anderson did it, why can't I?
Now, I just question, too, what kind of a money fight that would be, because there would be that curiosity factor, that X factor. How much does Roy have left? I mean, it's a kind of fight that even though maybe if Silva loses this fight in the rematch with Weidman, I mean, you know he's really going past his prime, and we know that Roy has lost fights that he won 10 or 15 years ago. So, I don't know, there's that factor, but having said that, if I can get a chance to see it, I'd sure be watching it.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, by the way, I'm back. And you got to understand, like a lot of people talk, that, you know, they definitely want to see it. It's right. It's intriguing because it's one, you got a guy with a name against two, a guy that, you know, is... The guy's smoking on the tipping with his little hoodie up because he couldn't see. Then I'm about a mile and a half from home, and I'm trying not to kill anybody. But this is kind of reminds me of something that I've said for the last few years on our show, with regards to Kimbo Slice. Who would I call out? Mike Tyson or Evander Holyfield. Because they have passed their prime, but they're crossover appeal names.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you have a lot of UFC fans. They might not know who Andre Ward is, but they sure as hell know who Roy Jones is.
Right.
And what would sell more? A fight with Andre Ward, who right now is the number two pound-for-pound boxer in the world, who's in his prime, or a fight with Roy Jones? Well, you're damn right it's going to be Roy Jones, who maybe you're right, a 10-year past his prime. What fight would sell more? Kimbo Slice and a very good heavyweight? Some names on the lines of, trying to think of good heavyweights now, with names.
Breaking up a bit there. I got most of that.
I'm in a little bit of a bad area. literally only a half mile from home.
Well, I did want to mention, of course, Mandela, Nelson Mandela. Big fan of boxing. He actually boxed when he was in prison. But he talked actually a lot about it in his books. One of the books, his autobiography, The Long Hunt for Freedom. He wrote, boxing is egalitarian. In the ring, rank, age, color, and wealth are irrelevant. I found the rigorous exercise to be an excellent outlet for tension and stress. It was a way of losing myself in something that was not the struggle. After an evening's workout, I would wake up the next morning feeling strong and refreshed, ready to take up the fight again. He also said, I didn't enjoy the violence of boxing so much as the science of it. I was intrigued by how one moved one's body to protect oneself, how one used a strategy to both to attack and retreat, and how one paced oneself over a match. And he really appreciated Muhammad Ali big time. He said, what I will remember most about Mr. Muhammad Ali actually said about Mandela, what I will remember most about Mr. Mandela is that he was a man whose heart, soul, and spirit could not be contained or restrained by racial and economic injustices, metal bars, or the burden of hate and revenge, not us forgiveness on a grand scale. He also said, inspired others to reach for what appeared to be impossible and movement to break through the barriers that held them hostage mentally, physically, socially, and economically. He made us realize we are our brother's keeper and that our brothers come in all colors. And actually, the broadcast of the last Saturday night's Boxing After Dark triple header featured a 2001 interview with Mr. Mandela. And guess who interviewed him?
You?
No. The Mad Hatter, Larry Merchant.
Oh, no shit. Your boy.
Yeah, he had a few drinks after that interview.
He's your boy, Rich. We've been discussing that for years.
Yeah.
You and Merchant get along. He's a BFF.
Anyway, get back to UFC Fight Night 33. I wanted to mention this story. 8 fighters on that card was impossible. Sometimes that's a precautionary thing to make sure there's no big deal evidence or no written evidence of major injury. But this time, a lot of knockouts, tough fight. Mike Chiquetta of Fox Sports. That Mark Hunt and Antonio Silva were sent directly following their 5-round war. Hunt definitely suffered a broken hand while Silva had several cuts that needed to be stitched up. Ryan Bader was taken for a hit. It was a cause by Lynn. 156 strikes for Anthony Ferocious train. And of course, Ferocious was transferred because of what he probably got a concussion. Other fighters, she went to the hospital. Pat Barry, that was a precaution because he was knocked out. Dylan Andrews separated his shoulder. KO Maglehead and Nick Ring both hospitalized. But Ben Askren has found a home, and it's not in any league you'd expect him to be in. Going overseas, Singapore-based 1FC has shared his services. And really don't know anybody at all in that league who could even hang with this guy. So this is really going to be limbo for him, I think, for a while until they bring somebody in there that he could really challenge him at some point. But, so.
Yeah, he says apparently it's a two-year or six-fight contract, whichever comes first, and they promised him 3 fights a year. And then I was reading the interview with him, and he said his future with the UFC is still rather uncertain because he feels that Dana's reluctant to sign him because of Dana's grudge with Bellator. And I mean, I don't know how true that is, but he feels that if he would sign Askren and Askren would come and ascend right to the top of the UFC welterweight division, that it would really enhance Bellator's credibility. So, I don't know. But he said it's a pretty good financial offer for him, and he's going to be still doing most of his training in Milwaukee with Duke Rufus, and then one of our former guests, and then spending time over in Asia just before his fights. So best of luck to him. We'll see how he does.
Well, this article mentions that one of the things that really pissed Askren off about the UFC was that they basically were calling the shots. And this is his quote. He said, "I've got a really hard time with people telling me what to do. And if I'm your employee, I'm going to listen to you. But now I'm not your employee, and you're telling me what to do? That's crazy." So basically he was offended by the UFC telling him that he should go to the World Series of Fighting for a while. So I like that advice, and my own way. I think World Series of Fighting and the UFC kind of get along better than most of the most competitors. So that probably has something to do with it. But, a lot of guys from the UFC who leave the UFC end up going to the World Series of Fighting, but in this situation where a guy wants to end up at the UFC, I guess he doesn't like that's the place for him. But anyway, one has a limited roster of welterweight, while Askren would ultimately have the opportunity to face guys like John Fitch and Josh Berkman in World Series of Fighting. The only opponent that lies on the horizon for him one would be Phil Baroni, 2-7 since 2009. I don't think that's going to be much of a fight. I've had him on the phone before, Phil Maroney. That was an interesting interview. So probably had him on once. He was very vulgar, to say the least. We had him on the show once before, too, didn't we, Tony? I think we did. You there, Tony? You're listening. Off, Tony. Tony! Are you there? Tom, are you there?
I'm here. Yeah, I noticed that Phil Baroni apparently called out Ben Askren. And it was kind of... Oh, Tony, back on.
Better fight me. Tornado.
Yeah.
There he is. He dropped out on us.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I wanted to talk about an ironic guy. Modern world here. Victor Ponte. Recognize the name. He's the infamous founder of Balco, the lab at the center of the DJ steroid scandal in baseball. Primarily involved with Barry Bonds at the time.
Yeah.
He served 4 months in prison for distributing steroids, and now he's come out as a reformer who is somehow now an outspoken advocate of clean sports. And he's actually found his second career in the world of boxing. He's starting with Nonito Donaire. He's worked with a number of elite fighters, Ponte, and he's employing creative training techniques and strict nutritional regimens. And boxers actually make up the majority of his clients these days. Sean Porter is another one of his latest pupils, who just won his fight the other night over Devin Alexander. And Ponte actually also briefly worked with Zab Judah, counseling him on nutritional supplements. So 63 years old, and he's definitely finding a new niche for himself in a very unexpected area. But the thing about this whole deal is it's kind of tough for me to believe this, but he's saying that he doesn't charge his clients a dime, viewing his work with them as, quote, restitution for his past wrongs. And he also said, "I want them to understand that there's a price they will pay for their association with me." There will be suspicion. There will be questions. And listen, I'm an anti-doping advocate now, and I have been for years. And the bottom line is this. All these athletes that I work with are clean, and there's nothing to hide. Kind of makes me picture a scene in which, you know, Conti comes on the team's board and on board a team, and, you know, one of the guys pulls him aside and says, you know, is there anything you can get us? Some other stuff? But, you know, he says he's done with all that, so we'll see what happens. He's, he actually started working with Porter 2 months before his last fight with Julio Diaz in September, which was a unanimous decision victory. But he made arrangements to have Porter's blood collected in Las Vegas, where Porter trains. Then he determined a nutritional program. He next had Porter and his father travel to San Carlos, California, after he signed to fight Alexander, for a nearly 2-week mini camp at the Undisputed Boxing Gym, just a few blocks from Conti's offices, at the, get this, Scientific Nutrition for Advanced Conditioning Center, which also is the acronym SNAC. How that works, but the sports supplement company he currently runs is there, and Porter did interval training with the Ukraine track guru Remy Korchemny, who was also involved in the Balbo doping scandal, and he also did high exertion hypoxic training using a hypoxicator mask, which is a device that reduces the amount of oxygen to facilitate compensatory measures. And he also went to deep tissue massage and went to Conti's offices and spent time in a hyperbaric chamber. And finally, Conti also advised him on how to drop weight by eliminating carbohydrates and taking hot baths. Porter really enjoyed the experience and believes it will give him an edge. I felt strong before and after workouts, he said. If anything, we're a little bit stronger, a little bit quicker, a little bit faster, a little bit of everything, just due to adding more. That's kind of interesting, you know, a guy that comes from the dark side and tries to straighten his act out. He says he's doing it for free, but he's got to be making some kind of money somewhere. More power to him if he's really doing what he says he's doing. But I would not be surprised to find, you know, all of a sudden he's back in the mix with some kind of seller. Dabbing back into that. Even the worst people reform.
Good to this hope for me yet.
Right. Here's a big MMA story. 11 women MMA fighters in the 115-pound weight class have been assigned to the UFC from Invicta. And they will move directly into the Ultimate Fighter House on May 18th to begin filming the fall season of the reality next year. White said that open tryouts will be, Dana White said that open tryouts will be held to determine the rest of the participants. Declined to speculate about the potential coaches, but he did note that male fighters will more than likely serve as those. And one of those 11 fighters is a former guest of ours, Beck Hyatt.
Oh, shit.
Invicta fighters, former Strike Force employee Shannon Knapp started here are all the fighters: Carla Esparza, Claudia Gadella, Alex Chambers, Felice Herrig, Beck Pyatt, Emily Kagan, Juliana Lima, Will Kamahuna, Tisha Torres, Paige Van Zandt, and Joanne Calderwood. Esparza is actually already the reigning Invicta strawweight champion. He was scheduled to face Gadella at last week's Invicta 7 event, but an illness suffered during weight cutting put Gadella on the shelf. And at the event, as far as a challenge Torres in an awkward moment, now it appears that moment will become more awkward when the pair must share a house together. Dana White says he's not going to buy Invicta. It's not going to happen anytime soon. Duffer's not going to pick them up. It wouldn't be good for the sport. But he says, actually, the addition of the strawweight division of the UFC will actually help Invicta grow. So I guess both sides are happy with it.
White also said the women's 135-pound division, UFC has been amazing, and we know there are a ton of talented mixed martial artists out there. Now you'll see even more great women's bouts in the UFC with the addition of the 115-pound division. We're excited to crown the first ever UFC women's strawweight champion in 2014. After a historic season of The Ultimate Fighter. So the actual winner of the show will be the first time that's ever been done. In any division, male or female in the UFC. So there's a big boxing story. All your UK friends are going to be pissed, Tony.
All my who friends?
All your friends over in the UK.
Okay.
All your buddies. Top of the morning, they won't be able to say hi to Mike Tyson because he's been banned in the UK. He actually got caught up in a 2012 law that bars people from entering in the UK if they've been a sentence of more than 4 years behind bars, or had any previous conviction resulting in a jail sentence of more than 4 years. Now, he only served 3 years of a six-year term, but it was a six-year term. So they said, no, cannot come into the UK. He was supposed to actually arrive this week for London appearances, including a book signing for his new autobiography, Undisputed Truth, and also a question-and-answer session set to take place in a boxing ring. And obviously he's got a rape conviction. That's what caught him up. But he also has other convictions. For assault, cocaine possession, and driving under the influence. And although he probably should have been charged with assault for biting Evander Holyfield's ear, he wasn't. As we know, he went bankrupt. Had his ups and downs, but now he's pretty popular, and he's trying to do these world tours and make extra money in these other countries, and countries like the UK have these crazy laws. You'll be a criminal over there. We won't let you in. So, unless he gets a new identity, he's probably not going to get to go to the UK anytime soon. And it doesn't appear there's any way around it. But from what this says, it doesn't really describe much. It just says he had to change location to Paris to salvage his press obligations for the UK. So I don't know whether that meant that he had to fly a bunch of people in to see him in Paris or what. But he actually had some dates booked in Britain for next year, which will now be in jeopardy. And he was supposed to bring his one-man Broadway show, directed by Spike Lee, there for 8 nights across the country in March. And actually, he was already the subject of a Change.org petition calling for him to be banned from entering the UK ahead of that tour in light of his rape conviction. He had his fans on Twitter. Even Piers Morgan wrote, "Can't believe Mike Tyson has been barred from entering Britain. He's a changed man with a powerful message. Ridiculous decision." And the Home Office over there in the UK said, "We would not comment on the details of an individual case. We reserve the right to refuse entry to the UK to anyone who is convicted of serious criminal offenses. In December of 2012, we toughened up the rules on entering the UK, replacing the previous discretionary approach with a clearer, stronger framework, including mandatory refusals based on the length of and time since sentence." So, no Tyson over there in the UK for a while. Interesting contract story here for boxing. I guess this maybe explains why Andre Wolfe has been so inactive the last few years. He actually just sued his promoter. And this was from Courthouse News Service just the other day, Wednesday, December 11th. And 29-year-old Ward, gold medalist, he sued Mission 2 to Promotions of Sherman Oaks in Superior Court there in California.
And he asks the judge to free him from a contract that he claims violates the 7-year limit on personal services contracts so he can, quote, better provide, unquote, for his 4 children and wife. Goosen Tudor Promotions is the defendant, not Dan Goosen, who's Ward's personal manager. Ward says he's been with Goosen Tudor without interruption throughout his 10-year career and first signed the order in 2004 as a 5-year contract. A few months before the agreement was due to expire in late 2009, Ward says he agreed to extend his contract for 5 fights over the next 2 years until December 17, 2011. Before his 5th bout in the spring of 2011, Goosen Tudor signed Ward to another contract that kicked in after a fight last year. And Ward claims that unless the court intervenes, he will be forced to fight for the promoter until well 2016. Ward's 2004, 2009, and 2011 agreements with Goosen Tudor Promotions constitute a continuous, uninterrupted contractual relationship for personal services of more than 9 years, during which Ward has been exclusively bounded to Goosen Tudor Promotions and prevented from contracting to fight for any other promoter, according to the lawsuit. To support his claim for declaratory relief under the California Labor Code, Ward cites Oscar De La Hoya's virtually identical claim against Tom Crank. In that case, the court found that De La Hoya's contract with his promoter was void. Ward is the World Boxing Association Super Middleweight Champion with a 27-0-0 record in knockouts. And he also has a gold medal at the 2004 Summer Olympics in Athens. And Dan Goosen has not commented on the suit so far. So there is a couple interesting stories. We have... pretty much just one more major story and whatever's upcoming. I know we've got one UFC card coming up. Whatever you got for boxing, Tony, we'll talk about that in a minute. But we have a real bad situation here. We talked last week about Shane Del Rosario, who had a cardiac arrest. Actually suffered what they called at the time catastrophic cardiac collapse on November 26th. He was resuscitated but later taken off life support on November 29th. He survived 10 days off life support, but passed away Sunday evening in Newport Beach, California, at just 30 years of old age. It's unfortunate. They're trying to do something good out of it. I thought they were going to establish some kind of charity or something, but... I think they're going to establish some kind of a fund in his honor, but I know they did donate his organ. I did see that somewhere. The UFC had a statement put out. They said, the Ultimate Fighting Championship mourns the tragic loss of heavyweight competitor Shane Del Rosario, who has passed away at the age of 30. Del Rosario suffered a heart attack on Tuesday, November 26, as a result of what doctors believe to be a congenital heart disorder. According to his manager, Jason House, the entire organization sends its deepest condolences to Shane's family and friends. And as we talked about, he had a lot of bad luck before this situation. He had a car accident in April 2011. Had some tough losses to Pat Barry and Stipe Miocic. But he had an 11-0 record before entering the UFC and a 3-fight winning streak in Strikeforce. And all of those 11 victories in that stretch came by knockout or submission. So definitely was a finisher. But condolences to his family and friends. And it's too bad, very young, for anyone to die, never mind a fighter at the peak of his physical fitness. So that sucks.
Yeah, it is. Sometimes we think that fighters are supermen, and this reminds us that we're all human beings, and it was one of those congenital conditions, and I guess didn't have any symptoms until it was too late. A horrible tragedy.
Yeah,
that's pretty bad. All right, so what do we got for boxing coming up this weekend, Tony? I know we have one big card, Maidana.
Actually, it was my friend of mine last night sent me a message on how much he hates my, Adrian Broner. And he was like, he sent me a message that tell Adrian Broner to shut the fuck up. He said, oh, Chris, what do you say now? He said, guys, comparing him up to Floyd, what's about Floyd, and he went through Floyd. And this guy goes, what if it was mine? He ain't Floyd. I'm like, well, yeah, we knew that, you know? And he's like, Broner reminds me of like a little kid that, is afraid of the big tough guy, so he makes himself his friend. He's like a toady, kind of like a kid in the Christmas story, like a little kid that like always hangs with the bully. He's like that to Floyd Mayweather. Like, yeah, Floyd, whatever you say, Floyd, we're friends, right? Because we're never going to fight each other, right? Floyd, we're friends. He knows he'd laugh and he'd get his ass whipped. Now, a lot of people say that Broner in the last 24/7, when Floyd was going to play Canelo, looked really, really, really out of shape. And even my one friend said that even in the promos that he was seeing, he still looks like he's a little on the hefty side. But that was a tough guy. Like, that was a guy that's never going to, you know, beat you with skills, but he's going to be a guy that's, you know, going to beat you just because he's going to get in your face. He's going to, rough you up a little bit and try to break you mentally. And I really don't like Adrian Broner. I really can't stomach him. And the only reason I would want to see him win this fight is so he would have to fight Danny Garcia. Because I would love to see when he starts, thumping his chest out for what Angel Garcia would have to say about that.
So we have Broner versus Maidana on that card. What else we got? I'll have it right in front of me. I could bring up my blog. I know I just posted this today. I'll check that out in a minute. Adrian Broner actually, Pauly Malignaggi wants the winner of that fight, by the way. And he really wants a rematch if that turns out to be who wins it.
I mean, the first fight was close. I mean, I wouldn't say it was like, oh my God. But it wasn't all that great exciting either.
No.
I mean, from what I could, stand to see him fight somebody else, a.k.a.
in the UFC. Well, while I'm waiting for this page to load, is there any other big fights we need to be watching out for in boxing this week?
That's the big one for this weekend. I'm still getting into everything, and let me see if I can pull it up and find that. I know my main man Stevie that says Cunningham is fighting them pretty soon, but I'm not sure if it's this weekend or not.
Well, let's see.
Let me see if I have anything else on here. Oh, by the way, it looks like last week, one of the fights we didn't really talk about was Felix Sturm really destroyed Darren Barker. So Barker, who fought so hard to finally win his title, and he was broken up over it, and he was, in tears, doesn't have that title anymore. It just kind of got ripped off his head pretty quickly. On the undercard of the Broner and Maidana fighters, we've got Keith Lumpine Thurman fighting Jesus Soto Carras. Carras, just a tough, tough, tough guy. Always going to make you work. And he's going to, he's going to bring it to Keith Thurman, but I think Thurman's going to have too much firepower for him. Also on the undercard is Jermaine Taylor. And, yes, the Jermaine Taylor, who just a little over a year ago, stuck around knockout. And his first time fighting over a year, he's 31-4, 19 knockouts.
quoting one Carlos Tondello, who's 31-12. I can't really say that I know much about him. I think that's going to be down in the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. And, okay, I'm not seeing anything with regards to Steve Cunningham on here. So that is one that I will have to discuss. I guess that fight is next weekend, and I'll discuss it then. That's really all the big boxing we got for this weekend.
Well, all righty then. Here's a story about Keenan Velasquez's successful shoulder surgery the other day, Wednesday. But here's the bad news. He's not going to be able to fight for about a year. Velasquez will not be able to train at all with his shoulder for a full 6 months. And then after recovering, starting training again in a full training camp, he would be looking at a fall 2014 return. At the earliest, and as we've seen with other injuries of this nature and other natures, it doesn't always go as planned. Case in point would be Dominic Cruz. He hasn't fought for about 2 years, injuring and re-injuring an ACL in his knee, and that's a guy with a title, which Payne also has the big heavyweight title, so... That's tough when situations like that happens and you have these guys all waiting for title shots who can't fight the guy with the title. So we'll see what happens there. It's not very encouraging for the UFC to have another title semi-vacant in that kind of a situation. But speaking of UFC titles, we have UFC on Fox 9 on December 15th. That's a big one from Sacramento, California. And it's from the Sleep Train Arena, although I don't think anybody's going to be sleeping in these fights. The main event is Demetrius Johnson defending his belt against Joseph Benavidez. Demetrius is 18-2-1, and Benavidez is 19-3. And I like that fight. I really haven't seen anybody challenge Johnson, except for Dodson did a little bit. But then he kind of let his foot off the gas and let Demetrius take over at the end of their fight.
Well, we'll see how much Bang Ludwig's training has affected Benavidez in this one.
Yeah. And one I'm looking forward to see, Uriah Faber, facing a real stiff test in Michael McDonald. Both of them have common losses to Rita Barao, but not really much else to compare on their records. I'd like Uriah to pull this one out, but Michael McDonald, you can't really count the kid out. He's tough. He's less experienced, but he definitely knows how to fight. Very technical. He really hung hard with Barao as they ended up getting submitted in the later rounds there. So this is going to be an interesting one. Great co-main event there. We also have Chad Mendez. I read today he's hoping for a title shot if he can beat Nick Lentz, who is 24-5-2. Dad is 15-1. We also have a couple of fighter guys on this card. Court McGee is one of them. He's 16-3. He's fighting Ryan LaFlair, who's 9-0. We've got Scott Jorgensen, 14-7, fighting Zach Markowski. Or Edson Barboza, 12-1, fighting Danny Castillo, who's 16-5. We've got... hometown guy from Massachusetts there, Joe Lazon, back in action. He's 22-9, facing Mac Danzig, who's 21-11-1. Both of these guys have been around for so long, and it's surprising me they haven't already fought. Unless they haven't, I just don't know about it. We also have Bobby Green versus Pat Healy. Bobby is 21-5, and Healy is 29-17.
That's got to be the most experience they've had in a while on a preliminary fight between the two guys. We've got Abel Trujillo, 10-5, fighting Roger Bowling, who's 10-4. We got Sam Stout, way down on this card. Only the second fight of the night, fighting Cody McKenzie, another Ultimate Fighter guy whose favorite choke is the guillotine. What was the guillotine choke?
Well, I guess the message to Stout is, Stout, you better win this fight. Yeah, because I found that unusual too. I mean, what a drop down in the priority there in the second fight of the night.
Stout is actually nicknamed Hands of Stone. He's is one of the better boxers in MMA when he's on his game. So I'm sure he's going to be hoping that he can keep Cody on the feet there because he doesn't want to end up in the guillotine. And first fight of the night is Alp Ozkilic, 8-1, fighting Darren Uyenoyama. Yes, that's how you pronounce it. Darren's 8-4. And that's it. So that's all my news stories done. We got, let's see, I'm checking Mac Danzig records. See if he's ever fought Joe Zong. I don't see his name again. Not even in the amateurs. So, that's all for me. You guys got anything else to add? Now's the
that's
time.
All we got.
Alrighty then. Till next week, that's all for us, and I will make it a point to find a guest within the next few days. We'll try to get somebody as big as possible. Maybe we'll get Bobby Gunn, since we got Glenn Johnson a while back. We'll have to see what Bobby Gunn says about fighting Glenn Johnson. I know our boy Matt Unowski can make that happen, so.
Yeah.
That'd be a good guess for us. We had him on the last time, probably a year ago, at least, maybe even more than that. And,
about that.
From what I remember, we had a bad connection, or he ended up disconnecting at the end. Something happened where we got off track. He didn't have enough time. I know it wasn't the smoothest interview, from what I remember. There was some kind of a hiccup. So this time we'll have to make it a better one. Anyway, that's all we got. So,
all right, guys. Let's enjoy the weekend. Enjoy the weekend of fights. Should have some good ones. Do it again next week.
Okay.
Bye.
Yes. Great show.